He had a good teacher.
Oh, okay then. Okay.
She caught him. There you go.
The ultimate catch.
Or he caught her. He's a better fisherman.
Well,
we'll open this up for the budget discussion with City Court, Library, and give some property tax updates. So first up, I guess, is you,
City Court,
Jesse.
And I don't know if you guys have talked to the county. Have you had any conversations with them
yet?
Yeah. Okay. Then I did come up with a little bit of a handout. This is what the county uses for budgeting for City Court. So I did bring, again, this is just a worksheet, and I had met with them last week, and the line items are pretty self-explanatory. And Jim, do you care? Do you, no. I hand wrote my hourly at the bottom. That's not something I discuss with the county. That's what I discuss with you guys. And then these other line items, since you pay the lump sum to the county, we break them out this way to track where the money's going. And they give me, this was back in April, so there were more expenditures, and that's why some of the numbers look different on that far right column. So that far right column has a total at the bottom, that $30,109. That's what we calculated with those line items, the expenses for supplies, paying people. You can see how it's broken out. Now that is more, and one of the first things I will say is supplies are more. I'm kind of shocked at how noticeably increased toner cartridge and everything is. And then the other increase is in the personnel services. So I did have a long-term employee retire, and she had been the full-time Justice Court clerk. I've replaced her, and the new person's doing great, but there are some administrative things that she just can't do yet. She hasn't been there long enough. And Elizabeth didn't want to pick up more time to do those things, but Kara Jones, who does compliance, said that she would add 2 days a month to do administrative work. And so one day I have coming out of City, one day is coming out of Justice. So that's calculated in here, this one extra day that's technically going to be paid to Kara Jones as compliance. I mean, she's got the title of compliance, but she's in an administrative role. And I rewrote job descriptions, so it clarifies that those 2 days, she's being a court administrator. And then, like I said, I wrote the number for my wage. I'm not looking for anything different than what we've done in the past, which is whatever I get paid by the county, I would ask for the same. And that $31.94 includes the cost of living increase that the county is planning on. And I think it's 2.9%. And then the county does, no, 2.6. My bad, 2.6. And then the county added longevity, this 1% longevity some time ago. I can't begin to tell you how they calculate it, but it's calculated in there. So I would be asking to be at the 3194 for next fiscal year.
Does the council have any questions?
Yeah, who are the two people you were talking about? You said you had to bring in another person to do
so
some of the...
So Lori DeMars retired, and she was my full-time justice court clerk. So I've hired a new person to replace her, and the new person is still learning, and there's so much that she was nowhere able to do some administrative work. So Kara Jones, who is the compliance officer, she's going to work 2 days a month on top of being compliance officer to do administrative work for Justice Court and City Court. And that's ordering supplies, keeping the calendar up to date, just making sure that we've got all the forms that we need. The courtroom's not just ours, we're in and out, so we keep forms stocked in a binder that I take into the courtroom. And it's stuff that the new person may eventually end up doing, but...
The new person's name?
Is Ashley Stockwell. So she's the Justice Court person that you guys don't pay anything toward.
So will Kara be training her in these things that she should be doing?
When she's... And actually, I had rewritten the job descriptions, so these things weren't in her job description. So she is an entry-level clerk, so these things were not in her job description. And I don't know if it would change. This is what happens when you have somebody for over 23 years, and so many things are being done under an old job description, and just because they need to be done. So I don't know that it will go back. I've got now entry-level clerk, senior clerk, compliance officer, and then separate job description for court administrator. And that's the 2 days a month. Not 2 days a week, 2 days a month.
So the woman who retired, what was her pay? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't.
I'm just wondering, at the entry level, obviously there's a big difference between
what
you were paying.
Yes.
And so, and you mentioned that with the addition of Kara in there, it's going to go way up. I thought that would maybe balance that out.
Oh, it didn't go way up, but it is more. No, her pay didn't increase any more. So Kara is paid by the county. The city does contribute toward court mm-hmm. compliance, and that, but her pay and everything is just through the county. So she gets paid the same, and she was not, I can't tell you where she's at, because she's not where Lori was either. Where Lori had been there so long, she was the highest paid.
Yeah, I was just looking at the, 2 days at that one person's pay, then entry-level pay, and the person who retired. Mm-hmm. These two added together, it doesn't seem like it would be over what the higher paid person was. Do you get what I'm trying to say?
And the difference, no. the difference would be that in the past, things were being done. Lori did things as the Justice Court clerk, and there was nothing coming in from the city for that part. Does that make sense?
Oh, I see.
She was paid by Justice Court, and nothing came in from the city, but she was doing administrative stuff for both courts.
And we weren't contributing to that.
Right.
Okay, so that's some of the difference.
Right, exactly. And Elizabeth, who is your city court clerk, Elizabeth Johnston, she works 3 days a week, and Justice Court pays for part of her time too, but she didn't want any extra time, and her time is full when she's there. As part-time, her time is full. So I split out, and the difference, it makes it, you guys are contributing where you had it in the past for that administrative work.
That's what I was just wondering, how that difference
yes.
came in. That's
yes, it, because it does look different. I mean, I've restructured. It looks different.
Any other questions from the council? I might ask, okay, so this FY 2026-27 approved column, has the county approved that?
That's been tentatively approved. When we met last week at the budget hearing, that's tentatively approved. I mean, they haven't actually voted, but those are the projected numbers.
Preliminary.
Yeah. Yeah, it is it's very preliminary. And, I mean, one other thing to look at on there, they have that line item for overhead, and you see it's zeros in there. And I really can't speak to this super well. I encourage you guys, if you meet with them. So there had been a time when there was some money left over from what you pay to run city court, and that was going into this line item for overhead. And that is supposed to be for sharing the space, running city court out of the same space as justice court, for power, janitor, you know, everything that it takes to run a space. I always thought that was something that you guys should talk about as some certain, but that was how they did it. And there was no money left over, so last time, so there were zeros there. But that's why that line item exists. The county created it to put any overage in there.
Okay, we'll probably talk that over with the commissioners.
Do, and it, and really all of this is prefaced on the belief that, well, I should have started here, that I believe I'll make it through the election in the fall, and that if you folks do want to appoint me to be the city judge, that I'm still inclined to do the work. You've got choices, though, but this is all based on that belief, and then I'm also basing it on the belief that the county is still fine with city court running out of the county space. So, of course, that's an agreement that you guys have for the building itself, and I'm not trying to micromanage that. So you guys do need to really follow up with them in case there's a change. And the the wage for me, like I said, it's based on the cost of living, the longevity, and I'm not looking to increase my time or change it. It's the 40 hours a month. I'm just looking for that to stay the same.
All right. Hope, do you have any questions for Jesse?
No.
All right. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you. And I do want to thank you guys again for all the work that you did communicating about building space. I just feel like you guys really did work hard at it. And it didn't work out to share that, you know, have combined space, but I really appreciated your work. I thought you guys really worked at it. So, thank you.
Just one more thing, Judge. I looked through the revenue side of the reports that we have through May. And there's a significant decline in fees or fines collected. Do you have a reason for that?
Yes, and I will first start though by saying that the court can't ever be considered a cash cow.
Yep.
But yes, the number of tickets is down. The number of citations is down noticeably.
Okay.
We've noticed that too. Yeah. So there just aren't as many tickets being written in general, but especially in city court. And we actually, for what it's worth, we've actually been doing quite well collecting restitution from some folks that have tickets in the city court. But of course, city doesn't see that. That goes to victims.
Mr. Mayor, I have a question. You know, as and this just for maybe my information, but we're looking at each year giving increase of the COLA to every employee and whatnot. Is that reflected in the penalties as well? Do penalties go up each year, or they just stay the same and we have to keep paying more into?
Each legislative session, there are some changes. So when the legislature meets, they change some of the fines. And this is what I will tell you, that even if those limits go up, we as judges are mandated to do ability to pay inquiries with defendants to looking at retired public defender. And we have to determine if the person's in a position to pay. And there was a fairly recent, although I'm losing track of time, Supreme Court case involving a felony DUI, minimum fine $5,000, the Gibbons case, Jim, I don't know if you were still.
No.
And a district court imposed that minimum fine, and the Supreme, and the man was a veteran and struggling with employment and had some addiction issues, and the Supreme Court said, you can't impose that minimum. So, it's always a balancing act. Even if the possible fines increase, it doesn't mean that the court can always fine more.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So we're probably going to be reviewing some fines and stuff around town as far as the
check-ins,
cars and whatnot that are left around town that we need to get towed off and whatnot. And I guess those fees would be coming through
I'm pausing just, I haven't had any, like, vehicle complaints for so
long.
Well,
there haven't been. That's going to change. So,
and, like, Jim, off the top of your head, do you know how that's structured? Are those citations that would be written into city court, or are those on the civil side of things where the city would do the work and then go after the money?
Yeah, no, I think it depends, Judge, but
okay.
I think there are at least a portion of those are civil fines as opposed to a criminal.
So depending on how the code is written, they might get a citation or it might be work that the city does and then the city goes after the cost. And then, like, the chicken things are...
Chicken the egg.
Oh, it's just not a real clear path, at least from my perspective. If you're getting to the point of abating an issue, if you're getting to the point of, you know, let's say a coop that's totally out of compliance and you've got all the issues happening, I've read the code to interpret that the council has to, someone has to bring a complaint, and the council, we talked about this, Mayor, that the council would have to look at it as a public nuisance issue, and the decisions are made by the council about whether to abate. And I don't find that it's clear, straight path. Somebody gets a chicken ticket, and then the judge can order, tear it down. I don't think it's that straight of a path right now. I think it goes through council, and then if the person doesn't comply, and if the city abates it, then you can collect the cost, go after the person. There are other things that I see more often that are clearer, are like the dog at large, the vicious dog, those kinds of things. Those have some pretty clear penalties, and that's entirely up to you guys, what you do with those amounts. There's a bit of a hierarchy for some of them, and some of them, it's, well, most of the dog stuff, the animal control, there is like a hierarchy, I believe. First offense, second offense, and it increases. And I don't know if we've talked about this before. There are no surcharges on the city ordinance violations. And, Jim, can cities create a surcharge?
I have not looked at that, Judge.
It seems like I have heard some other jurisdictions, and I'm not saying this is an answer, but mean, the state has surcharges. That's the other thing. On top of any fine that I impose, there are state surcharges that I have to add. And they go away. They go to the state. The one thing I get to keep is for a victim witness program. If we have one locally, part of a surcharge gets to stay. I don't know if the city adding a surcharge that people would pay on top of a fine. The surcharge, you would have to earmark it for what you wanted it to go toward.
It's just that we're looking at the cost of having stuff towed and whatnot and trying to recoup it. And just wondering how much of that's going to come through the court eventually.
And it really will depend on how those ordinances are written.
And if it is a junk vehicle, I think the people will get a notice, but the county does have a junk vehicle program going now again, so that money to pay for that would come out of that junk vehicle program.
And there is a budget for that because they were on the count. The junk vehicle program was on the calendar for budgets before I went in, so I don't know the details of it, but there is some money. So it'll really, I'm not giving you a very good answer, it'll be really narrow depending on what the ordinance says, whether it falls under junk vehicle, what the court can do.
Okay. One last time, anything for the judge? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll move on to the library. Misty.
Hi. So, I am only asking for increases on two line items. The first one is the technology budget. We're trying to update we have 5 public use computers upstairs, and we want to make sure the public's information is always safe and secure. So I would like to ask someone, an IT person, to come and help with our Microsoft licenses switch over. And that was estimated at about $200 per hour, and it would take about 5 hours. Also, we need to renew our website domain next year for $100. And if anyone's ever looked into IT support, it's extremely expensive. So this is really lowballing. The initial cost estimate I got for if we have someone monitor our computers and be on call would be over $14,000 a year. So basically, I said, no, this is what I can do, but I just do need a little bit of help making sure that everything is set up correctly. So if there's any other issues or anything like that, I will Google the problem and figure it out. It's kind of what Jackie's been doing for the past 10 to 13 years too. So that is what I'm asking for in our technology budget on top of the 700 that we currently have. Under the repairs and maintenance line item, I'm asking for, I didn't write a price in here, I'm sorry. Oh yeah, $5,127. So the addition on the building was completed 20 years ago, and the sprinklers on this side of the building need to be removed and tested. I don't exactly know how they do all of that, but it's mandatory to have them for code reasons. And if they're still good and they replace whatever needs to be replaced, it can go another 10 years. So we're up for that maintenance. In addition to the last fire inspection we had, there were a few deficiencies down on this side of the basement, and if I had to hazard a guess, it was because of the the large windstorms that we've had, it made our generator go on and off a few times. So right now our strobe lights, if there's a fire, are not synced, and that can cause an epileptic seizure. Also, our elevator is not timed right, so it will actually go down and then up, or it's just not correctly timed. So they would fix that. We also have a couple other small things. A pole station needs to be repaired because it's worn, and I think that's it. But with time and labor and all of that, it would cost the $5,000. That's what I'm asking for.
And this just reminded me, but the mandatory inspection has to happen every 20 years, every 10 years?
So the initial, since, so it's the scope overview for the sprinklers is to pull all necessary QR type sprinklers due for sample testing, which is every 20 years. Okay. And then it would be every 10 after that. So just to make sure everything is working properly. Do you have any questions?
So that $5,127 is the total for all the repairs and maintenance line items?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then $1,500 for the technology side? Is that what it says?
$1,000.
I think I brought it down to $1,000.
Okay, because it says $1,500, is that?
Oh, sorry. I must have paperwork.
I think I moved it down to $1,000. I'm so sorry.
Okay, that's okay.
That's my bad, because I...
So,
I
need,
into things, I
so your technology budget would be $2,000 total?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm
okay.
So sorry about that.
That's okay. So an increase of $1,000 for a technology budget, and an increase of $5,127 for the repairs and maintenance.
And that would not be something that would happen every year. Like I said, it, the next one after that would be after in 10 years.
So this last line item includes truck and tool fees. What is that?
Oh, so on their estimate here, so they don't live here in town, and they'll be coming out of Billings. So they have a truck charge of $90, the tools that they'll need, mileage. So the supplies would be like a new horn strobe, and a new pole station is $525. And as far as I know, they would do two separate trips, and that's why there's the truck charge. I have that twice here.
Okay. Council, any questions?
Do you guys have any questions?
No. Did we all get this one?
Should have been right behind your budget papers.
And just to be clear, the repairs and maintenance increase that we're asking for is only for this coming fiscal year. It wouldn't remain that way moving forward until the 10-year mark.
Okay, are we good to move on?
Yes, yep.
All right, thank you, Misty.
Thank you.
And hope you know. give the updates.
Yeah, we have more time than I thought we had.
That's what happened.
I thought I would talk about what property taxes are gonna look like. And get up on the board so everybody can see it. Do I just push the power button at the top?
Yeah, you might wanna try unplugging it and then re-plugging it in so it doesn't pop right on.
Okay.
And it's just down in the center there.
Just unplug the power cord?
Yeah.
Yeah, just get that a shot. Sometimes I think it gets lazy when it's not used constantly. And then push the power button again.
That was right.
Maybe push it a couple of times. I don't know what.
You want the gavel?
Here we go.
Yeah, give it a little bit.
Okay, it's coming. Okay, so I want to show what state legislation did as far as property taxes for the residents, and then we can look at some other stuff if we have time. And we'll look at this very confusing chart. Let's see. Which one is it? Switch?
I think so.
Okay. Here we go. Okay. Let me see if I can zoom this. I don't know, this is about as good as it's gonna get. So here's where we were last year, and here's what's coming up this year. So when it says MHV, that's medium home value. So I don't know what that is for Sweetgrass County yet, but if for Sweetgrass County our median home value is $350,000, let's just say that. If your home is worth $350,000 or less, you're going to be taxed at 0.76%. If your home is worth $400,000, the first $350,000 worth of your home will be taxed at that 0.76, and then the next $50,000 would be taxed at 0.9%. And it just goes on and on. So if your home is worth $500,000, the first $350,000 will be taxed at that. The next $50,000 to $400,000 will be taxed at that, and then from $400,000 to $500,000 will be taxed at 0.9. And so there's different columns all the way up to over four times the median home value. Any questions on that? That's for single family residents. Here's where, and so you can see that this went down in these two areas. However, this one went up, and this one went up. If you get into a long-term rental, so apartment buildings, or a house that you rent, you're going to be taxed at 1.1% if it's a multi-family, so if it's apartments. Otherwise, if it's just a home that you're renting, it gets taxed the same as single families. If your home in Big Timber is a second residence, for those people that might just be here part of the year and they're not considered residents of Big Timber, they get taxed at 1.9% straight across the board. Same for a short-term rental. Airbnbs, things like that will be taxed at 1.9%. And then commercial and industrial are 1.5 and 1.9, depending on the median value. Any questions on that? So that's what happened with property taxes this year. Now for the, for the city, okay, they passed what's called State Bill 117. Senate Bill 117. Okay, so when the city could figure out their increase in what they could collect for tax revenue, they would take the base of what they had the year before, and you would get to add half the rate of inflation. This bill now allows the city to take the full rate of inflation into their tax base. Over the full rate of inflation averaged over the last 3 years. So before, if the average rate of inflation was 4% over the last 3 years, the city would only take 2%. Then the next year, if it was 4%, the city could only take 2% again. So they saw this, you know, gap between what the city was able to collect in revenue to help cover. And the problem with that is that, as we know, costs are rising, but our ability to collect the tax revenue that we needed wasn't keeping up. So they created this bill to where now we can take the full rate of the average of inflation over the last 3 years. And this year it's 2.97% that will be added to our tax base.
That's the inflation factor.
That's the inflation factor.
So half of that, right?
Well, now we get to take the full amount.
Okay.
That's what the bill did, is it changed us from being able to take half.
Okay.
Now we get to take the full amount. And I probably won't be able to answer all your questions, but I will try. This is just kind of the history of what happened and how it came about. So they'll take last year's actual assessed collected, what we collected, and then they'll add in the full rate of inflation. Now, I hope I can explain this to where you'll understand it. When we get our certified taxable value, it shows the certified taxable value of all the property in the city of Big Timber, and then it separates the newly taxable property. So homes that were built that year or businesses that were built, new construction. And it gives us a value for that newly taxable property. So what they've changed with this bill is they've broken it out into classes. And so we've always been able to take 100% of the newly taxable property. This year, the state is saying we can only take 75% of the Class 4 newly taxable property, and then all other classes, we get to choose if we want to take 50% or 40% of the newly taxable property. If we decide we want to take 50% of the newly taxable property, we have to put the 10% into a reserve account to use when, if one of our top 20% taxpayers in the city goes out of business or leaves town or loses a certain amount of their value, then we can access that money in the reserve fund. Okay, so I'm guessing it won't be much. We don't have a lot of newly taxable property coming into Big Timber. We just don't. But 10% is 10%, and I think we, in my opinion, we should create the fund and keep that money, and we could put it in an account and gain some interest off of it and at least have a little sort of reserve. I'd rather do that than give it to the state. But that's for the council to decide. So, and then after that, that newly taxable property will become part of our property tax base the next year, and then we'll have a different set of newly taxable property if things are built.
Are there restrictions on what you can use that money on? Or?
Of course there is.
Of course.
Yes. Let me see if I can find that. So here's what they consider newly taxable property. New construction, an expansion or remodel, but it has to substantially, you know, reappraise the or bring up the value of the property.
Like the turtle.
What's that?
Like the turtle.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Probably. Yeah, absolutely. Any property that's annexed into the city would be considered newly taxable, a new subdivision, a property that might have been tax exempt that's now taxable. So that's what's considered newly taxable property. So this is how they figure it out. You start with last year. We're going to add our inflation rate factor, and then we're going to take out the new construction and add back in the capped percentage. So whether that's some of it will be 75%, some of it will be that 40 or 50%. Whatever we decide to do. And then that will be what our tax base is. So here's kind of some information on whether or not to have a reserve account. So option A is not to create the account. You get a 40% credit. There's no account, you don't have to administer the fund, you don't have to worry about it, you just get that 40%. If you decide to create the account, then we have to create the fund, which to me is not that big of a deal. And then we'll have it, it's locked until there's a trigger event. So let me see if I can find what those trigger events are. Okay, here it is. So you can use it to pay outstanding capital bonds, decrease the mill levies for up to 10 years, attract new replacement industry, incentives to expand local employment or infrastructure investment for new development.
What percentage of that reserve can actually be used for this? Like somebody moves out of town, there's that whole pot sitting there that other, you know, we've put in from multiple people. Does that release that whole fund or only a portion of that fund related to the person who left?
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know if we're allowed to use all of it or, yeah, I don't know. But I can find out. And then I have asked the county to send us a report of who our top 20% taxpayers are, so that we'll know and be able to, you know, be aware of that. She's working on it. Okay. And then the rest is about milled levies, which we don't have any. So any questions on any of that? Okay. So that's all I kind of have.
All right. About. Any public comment as to what's taken place so far?
I'm just curious how the median house value is determined. What determines that?
I don't know.
Realtors.
Is it? Well, honestly, I mean, that's what I was wondering.
And from your house assessment?
Yeah,
like,
your appraisal.
Your appraisal, like Peggy Graham goes around and appraises your property and...
That's
true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's from the appraisal value, not the market value.
Okay. Oh, that is actually what my question was. Thank you.
All right. Well, you want to dive into anything else on the budget? I just explained for Mike's benefit that Hope gave out the preliminary budgets for the revenue and the expenditure sides so far through, is that through May?
Well, no, we're doing part of May's claims tonight, so please don't have all of May's numbers in.
And it, you know, it's just good to go over those things before we get into the actual discussions, Mike. Kind of see what's trending as far as revenues and expenditures go.
I mean, we could start off, go through some of the revenue. We could look at the projects for this. That were proposed for this year. I don't know.
Yeah, let's go over the proposed capital improvements.
Okay. So I met with Chris and we kind of put together a list of things that he had, things that I was thinking about, and came up with this list. Of course, at the top is City Hall. I do not have that included in the expenditure budget that I gave you. The council needs to decide how they want to pay for that. Is it going to be split? So anyway, I did not include that, but City Hall. Chris wants to pave the block of 3rd Avenue that's in front of City Hall. And so he put that into the budget as well. He said he needs to purchase a new truck. And he wanted to, and maybe it's better for him to come and explain the cost for that, but he wanted $100,000 for that. The pool liner, we're waiting on some estimates. We didn't do that last year. We've got to get that somehow into the budget this year. There is money in the about $30,000 in the Ramsey Pool Fund that we could use to pay for that, and either have the balance come out of the general fund or out of our capital improvements fund.
Will that be the end of the Ramsey fund, that $30,000?
Well, it would be, we can only spend the interest. We have about $32,000 in interest, so it would be most of it. And then Chris would like a generator at the public workshop, $75,000, $25,000 to be split from water, sewer, and the streets general fund. We have our second water tank project that's ongoing. That's all paid for, except for $65,000
with grant money, and then 65,000 of this water fund. And then we'd also like to get a transfer fence up at the transfer site to keep the trash from blowing into the river. Republic Services, Ryan had said that they possibly would pay half. We could split the cost. So that's on our list as well. I don't know if there's anything the council or mayor want to add, or, but that was what we came up with.
Okay, thank you, Hope. Anything else from the council?
Did he specify what kind of truck he was looking to get?
He didn't.
He'll go over that when we go through his line items, Mike. Well, we'll close the budget work meeting then, and we'll take a break for a bit. Right, we'll open up the regular city council meeting at this time. First item is to approve the minutes of the June 1st, 2026 regular city council
meeting. I'll make a motion to approve the minutes from the last council meeting.
Is there any corrections or additions first?
I didn't see them.
Okay. We have a motion on the floor.
I'll second the motion.
Been moved and seconded to approve the minutes of the June 1st, 2026 regular city council meeting. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. All right, page and...
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir.
Can I make a motion for formal consideration of all remaining agenda items?
Okay, is there a second to that motion?
I'll second that.
Been moved and seconded for informal consideration of the remaining agenda items. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. All right, Paige and Melanie, tell us about this Port Authority.
All right, okay. Thank you very much for letting us come before you again. Sorry, I hate standing here with my back to you guys. Those are awkward, sorry. This is something that we had brought to you guys
in January, I think it was.
Yeah,
either January,
6 months ago,
first
or
part
so,
of
I think.
February, yeah, to consider possibly joining with the county to form a joint city-county port authority, and for the basic purpose of economic development. And I'll just kind of reiterate some of the high points that I talked about before. Just economic growth and job creation, efficient infrastructure development, regional collaborative strategic planning, and then probably the most important one is the ability to future-proof our community. You know, just because as global trade patterns have evolved and it's gotten a lot more competitive, people shopping on Amazon, wherever, we want our city and county to be proactive and, you know, keep us, well, I don't know, change is a little unsettling. It's important to recognize that standing still could mean to missed opportunities. And it's not about change, but more about progress that benefits everybody. You know, keeping our businesses viable downtown, keeping our stores open, things that everybody benefits from. Stakeholder engagement, ongoing oversight. We want to serve the best interests of our community. And we urge you to look at the potential of this as not a disruption, but an investment in our future. And then Paige can speak more to the formality of it. She did go ahead and actually draft a resolution, and the county said to go ahead and bring forward over here. They're supportive of it. They want to do a public hearing. They want to hear what the public, general public has to say about it going forward. But I just think it's win-win for all of us. So
yeah. So this resolution, I mean, there's a number of port authorities in Montana. The resolution sometimes is 2 pages, sometimes it's 20 pages. It kind of depends on how formal you want to be and how much you want to say in your resolution and how much you want to leave it up to. If you create the joint port authority and you create a board of directors, board of commissioners, it's called, and then you can vest in them the authority to go ahead and adopt bylaws, et cetera. So it kind of depends on how formal we kind of split the examples we saw in terms of what we did in drafting this one. But the idea is the county and the city would each appoint some of the members of the Port Authority. And then the Port Authority by statute has some pretty broad powers. I didn't make copies for everyone, but the purposes and powers for a Port Authority are kind of quasi-governmental. So the purpose is to promote, stimulate, develop, and advance general welfare, commerce, economic development, and prosperity of the jurisdiction, to endeavor to increase the volume of commerce within the jurisdiction of the Port Authority and the state through planning, advertising, acquisition, establishment, development, construction, improvement, maintenance, equipment, operation, regulation, and protection of, and of course, transportation. That's how they all started. You know, you think of the Butte Port Authority and things like that. But the ones recently have really focused on the rest of this statute, which is cooperate and act in conjunction with other organizations, public or private, in the development of commerce, industry, manufacturing, services, natural resources, agriculture, livestock, recreation, healthcare, and other economic activities in the state. And there's more, but it's all along those lines. So you can act as a quasi-governmental entity. You can apply for grants. You can qualify as an economic development organization. We don't have a local EDO. We have a Chamber of Commerce, but their focus is a little bit different. So it would allow this entity to qualify as a local EDO and participate in some of the programs that the state has for small businesses, for small business administration, for applying for that opportunities in rural economics. There's a lot of money available through those programs, and we've just never been able to apply for any of that because we don't have an EDO here. We don't have an entity that could apply. And so some communities are very small. Shoto has its own, just the town, and it uses theirs primarily for really small business grants. Pondera County also has one, and they're bigger. It's kind of a three-county area. So they use theirs for some business grants, business development, education, training, but they've also worked on some bigger projects there, Kootenai Business Park and different things. And then, of course, you have like Butte that has a whole business incubator program built around this idea. And so they help businesses that don't yet know if they can make a go of it. They help them by paying 3 months of rent, saying, you know, we'll give you a shot, we'll give you a chance, see if you can make this work. And they found that to be very successful. So I think there's just a whole host of opportunities out there and varieties of ways that you can use this. I mean, we often get questions in the planning office about, hey, this company is looking for a place to locate. Do you have this kind of building with this kind of power, with this proximity to a highway or transportation? And, you know, we can't always put that together quite as fast as we'd like, because it's not information we have at our fingertips. But if we did have some of that, that might help too. And so part of it is trying to keep our great businesses that we have here going and thriving, prevent the, you know, having one of the major employers go out of business, but also to look for new businesses and industry that, you know, are compatible with the community and what people want to see here. So that's kind of the...
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, another part of that is trying to diversify our economic base and our tax base here within the county and the city. You know, we rely so heavily on the mine, who's been a great partner in everything. And actually, even Heather has encouraged us to, you know, go ahead and start looking at doing some kind of economic development, because as you probably know, the mill, if you look at the makeup of the mill, you know, it was 50% mine, 50% property. Then it was like 35% mine, 65% property. And each year that piece of the pie has continued to shrink, and it's put a lot more pressure on the residential people. So if we can get our tax base a little bit broader by encouraging, mm-hmm. you know, some businesses. And I think you're kind of picky about what you look for to come, you know, I mean, not data center type things. But anyway, nevertheless, it helps make that tax base a lot stronger. And then, you know, when the market goes up and down and things shift, it doesn't take such a big hit on our residential people.
Residential, yeah.
And then, and just kind of as a final aside, today I always get things from the Chamber of Commerce, and part of their quarterly newsletter talked about Big Timber, and it was very cool. They were talking specifically about the pilot tourism grant that the collective got, but you know, they were celebrating the fact that the expansion of the museum and the groundbreaking work over here at Sheepherder Square, and it's just kind of cool. They were talking about, you know, looking at assets, strengthening local economies, building on what you have, make it a destination, you know, people coming through. As Monty Cook always said, you know, there's just millions of people driving by, so, you know, why not come in and, you know, eat lunch and have a beer or something, or play around the golf, and how do we capture those people, and then how do we say, oh, widget maker, why don't you come here and make your widgets and employ your 10 people and help us mm-hmm. with our taxes. And I think housing was the one other thing, and when Paige and I talked earlier today, we're like, yeah, it's such a big issue, and yet it's so difficult to wrap your head around. You know, it's like, what does that look like? And I know every other small community probably
struggling with the same.
Yeah, probably this side of the Mississippi
yeah.
is trying to figure out what that looks like.
Small or big, you know, how do you? I mean, some communities have gotten money, and probably Snowy Mountain Development Corporation, Snowy Mountain Port Authority, too. It's been one of the best at getting money for housing.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you know, they even struggle with, okay, but you get the money for housing, how do you then use it? Some of it is building kind of workforce housing for, you know, hospital employees, et cetera. Some of it is just trying to incentivize development or provide tax credits for development or redevelopment of places. So I think that's a continuing struggle, but it's something that no one really has had time to focus on that, and it would be nice to have, you know, a dedicated person that can look at those things in more depth and go out and find, you know, find the authority and find the resources and provide some options for what, you know, people could do to try to help with a housing situation. So
anyway,
yeah.
I mean, we're asking for your support. I think this would be it would just be a good thing. I know probably 40 years ago, or maybe longer, I think I didn't even have children, we struggled along with trying to put together an economic development group. It was a whole different group of people. Maybe some of you remember Don Peoples from Butte. He was their big economic person, and he was very instrumental in helping us get an actual paid chamber director. But I think it's just gotten so big now that, you know, maybe it's time to move on and look at an actual purpose, an employee and part-time employee. I don't know, maybe volunteers. That's how some of these places do it.
Yeah.
But anyway, to focus on economic development.
So that employee then would be just split between county and city?
No, they would work for the...
They would work for the Port Authority.
Okay, and is that a place that they need like a permanent, like an office?
Yeah, and we've talked about that some, that the county annex might have a space that they could make available either part-time by splitting it with someone already there.
Well, and I think the Community Foundation at one time had also thought that this was important enough that there might be some space over in that other building or somewhere. I mean, but I think that's something that you entrust to your board of directors, you know, to go forward with that and figure out, you know, what does that look like if you're going to be funded? I don't know. I mean, the county has talked about using some of the economic development money to put forward for making this work.
Yeah, from the metal mines, right?
Yeah, and then also, like I said, the mine, Heather McDowell, had talked about being willing to, you know, support something like that. So anyway, I mean, there's just opportunity,
and then
we need the structure in order to get the ball rolling.
Right, we need to have the structure. And in the third year of the pilot community tourism grant, that third year isn't yet approved because we aren't into that budget cycle yet, but we are asking for some money there to help fund this position. So,
do Park or Stillwater counties have port authorities?
I don't know.
Park County has an economic development organization. It has an EDO. So that, I think they've used that EDO in lieu of any kind of port authority. Mm-hmm. I think you've seen primarily the smaller counties and cities do port authorities because they did not qualify as EDOs for the longest time. You still can't. You need a vehicle like this in order to qualify as an economic development organization and be able to pursue some of that state money.
Right. And I think Stillwater County, I know, was in discussions with hiring someone to be an economic development person, I don't know, directly underneath, I think they're commissioners, but I don't know. They're doing something similar to what happened here with the collective following Reimagine Rural, except they're about 2 or 3 years behind us. And they also tried to get the pilot tourism grant, or I forget what it's called now, and they were not successful.
They weren't successful, yeah.
So anyway, it's... Yeah, I think everybody's kind of doing it. Now, the Snowy Mountain Development, Snowy Mountain Port Authority includes, like, Wheatland County, Golden Valley.
Fergus.
There's, like, 7 or 8 counties that... Maybe five. I forget.
I think there's 5, yeah.
But, you know, the problem... Actually, Carbon County and Stillwater County had kind of talked to Sweetgrass County about, you know, going in with them, but so much of our aid right now, the things that we qualify for in groups already goes to them, you know, because they have bigger populations and they just kind of overwhelm us here. We're on the far west end of, like, Yellowstone Country. Well, Park County might be in Yellowstone Country too.
No, it's not.
No. Okay, so, you know, we're just on that fringe, and it's like we just don't ever get our fair share because we don't have anybody lobbying for it, basically.
Yeah, part of it is just trying to control our own destiny more.
Yeah. And we're unique. We still are very strongly vested with ag roads. So, you know, trying to pull all those things back in together. Yeah. So, anyway, that's my 2 cents. Do you have any questions?
Well, I was just wondering, like, being that we're in an upcoming building project, would it make sense to have office space in the new City Hall for something like this?
I guess that would
you
kind
guys,
of be
yeah.
your call. Yeah, I don't know.
Sounds like a good plan.
So right now, the way the statutes are written is the Port Authority can apply for city funds and county funds through mill levy, but the intent is that it be self-funded, that they apply for grants and things after getting kind of this initial funding that we can put together through metal mines and through the Department of Commerce and other things. And so then our hope is that they'll be able to get the grants and be self-funding. So Sarah Hudson with Snowy Mountain has been pretty successful at that. We've met with her.
Lending pool. Yeah. And, I mean, that's way beyond anything that I think.
we'd have to spend 10 years or so growing into that. But, I think there's ways to.
And it's going to be incredibly important, too, that whoever this person is going to really have to be on their game. You know, because I just can't envision us anybody. You know, I mean, the board is going to have to really make sure that whoever the employee is can do their job. You know, I think that's going to really, really be critical to the success of this program. So,
yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, but
right.
I think it's great. So.
Any other council questions? Any questions from the public? All right, well, we'll probably put this on the agenda for the next meeting to
okay.
vote on.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it, you guys.
Okay, next thing is a four-way stop or some kind of traffic control at McLeod and First Avenue. You have the email chain that I sent to MDT in Billings. They did come up and painted the parking stripes on McLeod Street. That was nice. Still, they're just a suggestion for a lot of people. and it's because of Mr. Sondino's comments a couple months ago at that intersection that moved me to contact the MDT in Billings about some sort of traffic control. Essentially, they came back and said, because of the traffic at that intersection, a stoplight is not a possibility. You know, a four-way stop would be the only thing, or restricted parking, say for the first half block on both sides of McLeod Street on First. Any ideas from the council?
Well, I think definitely that at least from the corner to the alleyway next to Key Insurance there, mm-hmm. probably should have no parking at all there. It just restricts too much of your vision, you know, coming, trying to pull out there. I mean, that's the worst section, is pulling out from McLeod. Out of town. The other corners aren't as bad, but that's probably the worst section right there next to the Key. I think if we at least went to the alleyway, it would at least give you enough time to see something that was on its way, mm-hmm. give you time to make a decision to go or not go, for sure. I think at a minimum that's what we should do.
Any other council ideas? What about the public? Brian, you're here. What would you have to say again?
Well, the first idea I had was to make that no parking on both sides of it, all the way to the alley. Because it's bad when you turn left coming down McLeod, but there's coming the other direction, you can just about get creamed too. Oh. So. I've had it happen to me several times, both coming both directions. I mean, traffic travels too fast on First anyway, in my opinion. But I think a four-way stop would solve it, but I will throw out there, I think, the potential for another nasty wreck with a four-way stop there until people get used to it might be kind of high. Because you're going to have people going up and down First that are not used to it, and then all of a sudden, holy, you know, all of a sudden somebody's in front of them and they T-bone them. So, mm-hmm. I think the easiest and safest solution is no parking all the way to the alley on both sides. Mm-hmm. That was what I threw out to begin with, but that's just my 2 cents worth, nothing more.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Did they say if they'd be willing to put, you know, like a warning light flashing before this, the four-way at least, to let people know that they are coming up to a four-way? Not a signal, but just like a warning that there's flashing.
That they would install and maintain the appropriate signage on First Avenue, stop signs, advanced warning signs,
right.
and pavement markings.
So that's all I know too, is what's in this email. Yeah. I'd be inclined to think that Brian is right there. That might be inviting a bad wreck if mm-hmm. it was a four-way stop.
Mm-hmm. I think no parking to the alleys is the best solution.
That, and I still think we should put one of those mirrors up, and whether or not people decide to use it, it's still there. So people, you know, like at Harlow has at that one intersection, along with the no parking mm-hmm. from the alley to the first McLeod Street.
But one similar to going down the fairgrounds
yeah,
road.
Similar to that.
Yeah. Any other public comment?
Mr. Mayor, I have a question on that.
Yeah.
Do those signs that, I don't know if they're effective or not, but the ones that actually say your speed is 43 and it's supposed to be 35 or whatever it might be, mm-hmm. are those effective? Do you know if they're...
I don't have any data. That's
yeah.
It made me slow down.
So they are effective. Yeah. Maybe something like that both directions, too.
But that would Carrie be brought that up, yeah. too.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that we'd have to get approval from the state for those?
Mm-hmm.
Right. But
I can't imagine they'd say no to that. Because mm-hmm. it's not stopping traffic.
It's a matter of who's going to pay for it, too.
Yeah, that's true. But as an idea, anyway.
Probably pay for them a week with speeding tickets. They're enforced.
Yeah. Except for the state of Monica.
Get those automatic, you know, they take a picture of your license and they send you a ticket in the mail.
Yep. Do they have a sign like that that would say approaching four-way stop or something like that? If they were to go to the four-way stop down there? Like a block in advance of warning sign, solar power or something. So it wouldn't have to be wired in and all that. Could warn people that they're approaching a four-way stop, something will get their attention. I don't know.
Well, and this is just kind of a discussion on what direction the community and the council think we should go here. We will hold a public hearing to decide whatever. Any of the signage that the city would put up needs to be permitted with the MDT, and there's a process for doing that. But
they don't have to control parking, right?
No, the city can actually control the parking.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. That's what I brought up last time.
But any signage that would reflect that parking restriction, the city would need to get permits for it.
I think it's a good place to start.
Okay. Yes?
I love this idea of any way to make that intersection safer, and I love the parking, no parking idea too. I was kind of wondering about a yellow flashing on first too, and I really like that speed idea. I guess the other idea that just came to mind, knowing the tavern's opening soon, is like, will we start seeing more pedestrian traffic across? And is there an emphasis on this is a pedestrian byway too? I know it didn't go over well in Livingston. I haven't thought about it much, but the bump outs, I know those are a use of like restricting flow at certain intersections for pedestrian safety, and so is that something worth investigating further too? Not only just, you know, street painting, but you know, a narrowing and a speed sign, or I don't know, there might just be other ways to kind of layer, I guess I'm asking.
Like rumble strips or something like that, or something.
No.
They bring the curb out a little bit, so the pedestrians have a little more protection.
Yeah, and it makes you just like psychologically slow down because you see the road kind of restricting. I don't know what that would do for turning corner for the big buses and things. You know, But there are experts who do those things, so, you know, maybe there's some counsel we could see. But anyways, yeah.
All right.
Maybe we should just move on the building to another 10.
Well, one idea that was out on the street that I'll share with everybody was a roundabout there.
Doing everyone in Billy, so.
Yeah, that's what I did too. I laughed. So.
Not enough room anyway.
Right. Okay, so does the council want to proceed with a public hearing or just put up no parking signs? Get in the system to permit no parking on that first half block on each side going both ways, or?
Can we make that decision to do
no.
that? Well, then we have to have a public hearing.
Oh yeah, we'll have a public hearing,
so
but just a direction that you're leaning to go.
I'm leaning towards no parking sign, but yeah, let's do a public hearing, obviously.
Okay. Any other public comment concerning the intersection?
I like Brian's idea to where we make no parking all the way to the alley, all the way around, where you're sitting, the church is here, the new tavern's here. You have to go out in traffic before you can see anything. Restrict parking at the Turtle Building all the way to their alley, the bank all the way to their alley, all the way around, and put stop signs at all four. Because if you allow parking all the way around and put a stop sign there, who's going to see it but the semi drivers? And they're going triple the speed. I think we need to work on more enforcement. Have a cop sitting there all day long or whatever. But it's
any volunteers?
But then you get it.
I'm just saying, they
if we
drive really fast.
Yeah,
yeah.
that's
what we're saying, Mike.
Okay. Moving right along then. Next thing is the change order for task 2 and 3 on street improvements by Lead Construction. If you look at the change orders, it's for more materials. A little more demolition on the streets. This was a streets project.
They actually had to raise the street 1 foot somewhere.
Oh, there's, right in front of my house, they
elevated.
They dug it down and then raised it back up. And you know that compaction helps with keeping that asphalt from heaving.
So they didn't include that originally to compact that street?
Oh yeah, they did. Most of this material though is actually for the cutouts on those intersections. They went back farther than and tied into the existing streets.
Okay. Is that where they took the trees out?
The trees were on the curb line. And the root system on them would have been damaged in that excavation of the old street bed. So, and I know Chris did talk it over with Brandon with Great West, the engineer, and they did. Let's see, they knocked it down about $6,000.
Do we have a way to pay this?
Going to come out of the gas tax fund, which is where the rest of the project has come out of.
And we have it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just based on what Chris Novotny is saying here. I think he's assuming it's fair price for the work done. Mm-hmm. Well, if there's, I guess, I'm ready to make a motion if you want to do the public.
Any public comment concerning the change order for the street projects? There being none.
Anyway, Mr. Mayor, then I'll make a motion that we approve the change order for Test 2 and 3 street improvements by Weave Construction.
I'll second.
Been moved and seconded to approve the change order for task 2 and 3 street improvements by Weave Construction. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Okay, next thing is whether to decide or make a decision on extending the Intercap loan for solid waste equipment. Carrie, do you want to kind of address this for Mike's benefit?
Well, last year when we were going over our garbage issues, we maybe thought about starting to do it on our own instead of having it in public. So Jeff did a lot of research and thought we needed about 1.5 to start it, doing it ourselves. So we applied for approval for a loan, but this is whether or not we want to move forward with that. So we never took possession of the money or anything, right? So.
And extending it just leaves us the option to do this.
I don't know.
We still haven't. We're not accepting the money.
No, I think it's. I think they're asked if we're going to commit to taking the money or not. Is my understanding.
Otherwise, they're going to close it out.
Yeah.
And we would just have to reapply if we wanted to in the future.
I say we just close it out because we're nowhere near.
I agree.
So I guess public comment.
Is there any public comment concerning this loan extension, Intercap loan extension for solid waste equipment? Okay.
Then I would make a motion that we reject extending the Intercap loan for solid waste equipment.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to reject extending the Intercap loan for solid waste equipment. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion has been rejected for the whatever. Okay. Next thing on the agenda is approve the claims for the second half of May. Did I mess up, Trevor?
What's that?
Was there something on the agenda for you?
I didn't get the agenda, but I did have something.
Is that okay. Public comment?
What's that? Public comment? Is that where it would be?
Well, you can, but there can't be an action.
Okay. Yeah.
That'd be okay. Sorry about that.
Republic Service on here 3 times?
Because we didn't have accurate invoices for March, April, and May, and we finally got them. So we're paying.
Imagine that, right?
Yeah.
Did they ever get us that bond?
The what?
The bond. The
no.
Bond.
No.
questions? Mr. Mayor, I make a motion to approve claims for the second half of May 2026.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the claims for the second half of May 2026. Any public comment on the claims? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Okay, public comment. Here you go, Brett.
All right. Well, my initial reason for coming by is just something as simply as this. We wanted to have a church service over at Dornings Park. So I'm kind of here on behalf of our church. It's just going to be this upcoming Sunday for Father's Day, and we thought we'd like to do that outside. So I guess it's kind of why I wanted to come to you guys. It's sort of an official event, but, you know, it's in the park. So we do, actually from previous events, I got another certificate. The city of Big Timber is already an additional insured for our you know, for our insurance policy, so that's already in place anyway. We've done this in the past, so is there any, I know officially nothing can be voted, but is there anything legally that would prevent us from doing so?
And this is on the soccer field?
On the soccer field at Dornings, yes. Oh, yeah. Yep, out there where the bleachers are, you know.
Not the dog park.
Not the dog.
Right, yeah, yeah. By the soccer field, yep.
Ooh, that's so,
the
dogs.
Yeah, right, right.
Between landmines.
Yeah. So, no, that's all that was. And so, yeah, this is nothing to be.
Jim, would there be anything restricting that?
Not that I'm aware of, Mayor.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
It's public property, and I don't know that there's a lease or any sort of agreement that would restrict that. So, that might be a problem.
And it's certainly not a closed event by any means.
Right.
You know, anyone could come and join with us. So,
sure.
Okay, great. That's all it was. Thank you.
You just have to hope for no rain that day, right?
Yeah, that's right. We were looking at like 50% last time we looked. I don't know if it still is, but I mean, we're at the point we'll take it either way. You know, we like the rain too.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Any other public comment? Ladies before gentlemen.
Yes.
Barb?
Barbara Selk. First, I want to say on behalf of the 14 ladies that were in the pool this morning, it was really cold. It was really cold. And maybe we should have a real pool manager for the 10 weeks that the pool is open. The second thing is that there's a tree in the park by the pool, kind of high up. It's got a crack and a big gouge, and the next wind event we have, it's going to come down. It's going to break off. And it could land in the pool. It needs to be looked at.
Okay.
There's four trees like in a row close to the pool. It's the third tree. And the third thing, there are two rim benders, potholes. One's at 6th and Bramble that I have to remember every morning when I'm coming home from the pool. Real rim bender. And the other one is Bush and First. Another real rim bender. My fourth thing is our park is usually looks so good, but the last time it got mowed, there's a whole bunch of big blobs of cut grass, and it just looks terrible.
I will say regarding that, the week before the last week when it was mowed, the mower was down, so they weren't able to mow it that week. And now it's repaired, and they mowed it last.
They've left lots of big piles of grass. That kills the grass underneath it, and it takes away from the beauty of our park. It usually looks so beautiful. And whoever mowed this time,
the equipment wasn't working well or something.
Well, they shouldn't leave this. I mean, I'm talking big piles, not just, I mean, big, terrible piles. It looks really crappy. That's it.
All right. Mark's next.
Oh, Mark, you're next.
Mine's easy. Just can we put on next meeting's agenda to talk about non-op cars on public streets?
Okay.
Because nothing's changed, at least on the West End. And I don't want to
if you, Ron's not here, maybe he's at the next meeting and then we can kind of make some progress. That's all.
I have a follow-up to that. I was actually told to bring it to you guys from Ron. I guess there's a semi on 2nd Street down there at the West End.
Yes.
The owner of that gentleman's been contacted. He's got 5 days. So that,
okay.
That's at least, I was told to deliver that message.
Okay. Thank you.
Good one.
Anything else, Mark?
No, thank you.
Linda?
I was really delighted, Linda Brunkhorst, I was really delighted today to see the street sweeper out. Although, okay, I don't know how this piece of equipment works, but in the past, when you do the street sweeping, don't you like go to the gutter? You know, you're kind of like you're sweeping along the gutter, and so because I still have all of that debris in front of my house from the trucks anyway, but the street sweeper was going down the middle of the street.
I'm sorry.
And kind of fast too.
And so when it was going fast, I thought, well, maybe he's like going back to like whatever, you know, and then you need to dump it and refill it with water. But anyway, so I think that wasn't street sweeping.
No. A big waste of time, gas, time.
Yeah. So anyway, but I still have the junk in front of my house that I'd still like.
And was that on Busha?
I live at 708 Busha, and so I still have that, you know.
Asphalt.
Asphalt, thank you. I was like, that black stuff, you know, whatever that is.
Is it adhering to the pavement?
I swept the stuff out of the gutter so it wouldn't impede the rain. Oh. I'm so glad I did that. I don't know. I mean, I would like to think that the street sweeper, because you know those bristles are pretty tough, but you got to get on the gutters, man. Mm-hmm. It's like,
hello.
It was a head shaker.
All right, Mark, did you have something
else? I brought something up last year, kind of related to this, in that if we had signs that say on this day,
yes,
you can't park here. That solves two issues: more effective street sweeping and vehicles that are just abandoned. You know, on the streets running east west, you can't park on there on Tuesday. North south, you know, pick another day. But it's
like
one way to address two things at once for the cost of science, which is minimal.
Plus, look at all that ticket revenue.
There you go. That's a good idea, though.
Yeah. I mean, the
schedule
thing with the
cleaning.
Snow, you know, the
exactly.
Snow removal, too. It's mm-hmm. like, they, you see that in a lot of cities where, you know, you can't park between this time and this time for snow removal so that they get it good. Anyway, mm-hmm. I'm all in.
Any other public comment? Okay.
I just wanted to share something cool.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm Lauren Dillon. Last week, MSU Extension hosted a rural summit in Townsend, and I got to speak on a panel, a rural success stories panel, which was all pulled from the rural reimagining rural communities. And the summit was specifically designed for like funders, state people, like basically all the people that help make things happen across the state. And it was intended to like help then connect to the needs on the ground of rural communities. And so there were like 5 of us from across the state that got to share, and I just thought it was really cool, you know, to see that intersection and to have them really engaged, listening about the challenges and the successes we accomplish in our small town. So I just wanted to share that.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
One more time, public comment. Nothing.
We still have council concerns.
Yeah,
council. Yeah, I wasn't ready yet. I'm going to piggyback on the pothole thing. It is just, we got to get on that.
There are some brutal potholes.
From let me think now. This would be Harris. from first to third, there's multiple big holes. Yep. And I constantly having to go around them. You're constantly looking around this big motorhome to make sure you don't run into somebody. Then you got to make sure you don't run through that pothole.
Exactly.
And it's just not good.
It's the rim benders.
Well, I know, that's why we got the machine. Should be out there 2 hours a day or something. I don't know.
Anything else from the council? Should I take my riding crop to talk to the public works
people? Yeah. Take that mallet, too. Bam!
Take your spray can.
Big red circle around
them. Okay, anything else from the council?
Nothing. Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
I'd like to make a motion to adjourn this meeting.
I'd like to second that.
It's been moved and seconded to adjourn the meeting. Any other comments, questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you.
That is the best.
I have one more for your